Russia accuses Britain of exploding the Nord Stream gas pipeline last month, directly blaming London for sabotaging critical Russian infrastructure. Also, at least a dozen people, including women and children, are killed after two car bomb explosions rocked Somalia's capital, Mogadishu. Warm welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Muniz. Thanks for joining us. In Iran, funerals have been held for the victims of a recent terrorist attack in the southern city of Shiraz. In the city of Mashhad, thousands of mourners turned out for the funeral service. They chanted slogans condemning terrorism and those being behind the crime. Another funeral was also held in Shiraz earlier in the day. At least 15 people were confirmed dead in the Wednesday terrorist attack, among them women and children. Over two dozen others were also wounded. A gunman started shooting from one of the entrances of the shrine. He then headed to the main compound, firing randomly at pilgrims and staff. The assailant was finally injured by security forces and later succumbed to his wounds in the hospital. The Daesh terrorist group has claimed responsibility for the attack. Simonson Abbas is a journalist and political commentator joining us from London. We also have Firas Al-Najim, manager of the Canadian Defenders for Human Rights, who joins us from Toronto. Gentlemen, welcome. Simonson Abbas, I'll first start with you. You have the joint statement coming from the ministries in terms of the intelligence on this that was announced yesterday, and that's still making news because it's a developing story. They're releasing bits and parts of this report, which is quite extensive. But what we do know are things like the U.S. Spending $53 million, for example, to keep the protests going and maybe to have started them in some sense. You have also things like the U.S. U.S.'s CIA to have collaborated with British and the Israeli intel services. Revelations of this sort, which shows obviously foreign hands at play here. When these revelations are made, the next thing is what Iran should do. What do you think Iran's reaction should be to this?
Well, of course, it's something that can't be tolerated, but Iran has demonstrated a lot of patience, with so much of the infiltration, the spying, the assassination, because this is not the first time something like this has happened. So I would imagine, just looking at the way the Islamic Republic has responded in the past, it'll be a measured response. It has to be a measured response, because the war that the Islamic Republic is engaged in is a war really orchestrated by the Anglo-Zionist Empire and not provoked by Iran. It is something which has been going on since 1979, the revolution onwards. So the response is, of course, to General Qasem Soleimani. We saw that there was an immediate response with the Ayn al-Assad camp hit by ballistic missiles. We've seen on other occasions when the IRGC was targeted in parades in Iran, that again, there were missiles that were launched at the groups that were implicated. I think they were based in Iraq, and they were Kurdish linked at that time. Al-Jundullah, for instance, have been responded to by cutting off their sources and also targeting them individually too. So there can be many options of military kinds, but also I think that the actual response, which is already ongoing, is that Iran has a very powerful asymmetric response, asymmetric warfare response to all this. The interests of the Zionist Western Empire are being thwarted right across West Asia. So, you know, to say there should be a response, the reality is that the Islamic Republic of Iran is in a war, soft, smart, and hard power war. It's largely holding its own, if not winning, in many, many sectors, from Yemen through to Lebanon, through to Syria, through to Iraq. You can argue very strongly that the policy of the Iranians has been successful. As far as terrorism goes, of course, strengthening of the internal security, doubling up of more investment in security apparatus, more techniques for being able to infiltrate these groups abroad, further techniques of being able to show that they too can infiltrate the territories of perhaps Israel, perhaps even other powers that have been involved. And let's not forget, Saudi Arabia happens to be one of those powers implicated today. Israel, of course, US, and Great Britain. Is it time perhaps for Iran to take action on their territories? I'm not sure that that would be that welcomed. The truth is there are so many fault lines and so many weaknesses within America and its allies, Israel itself. Should Iran really decide to take action in their lands the way that the Western, Isaiah Western powers are doing, to destabilize Iran, to create color revolutions, to create turmoil, to try and have ordinary citizens killed at will, nuclear scientists assassinated, generals on diplomacy missions assassinated. If Iran was to go on this full gambit, I wonder how the Anglo-Zionist Empire would react. Clearly, the provocation they would then say would be tantamount to a declaration of war. Of course, when they do it, it's really just regarded as par for their hegemony's needs and their economic interests. I think it's sagacity, wisdom, and patience is going to be the way that Iran is going to operate again on this occasion.
There was, for us on the regime, a counterterrorism meeting that took place a couple days ago for 2 days in India. And I've sifted through the statements that were given by different representatives. And this counterterrorism meeting, obviously, at the core of it, as the title suggests, is what can be done to counter terrorism. And there were lots of sympathy going out to like country like India, which suffered that 2008 Mumbai attack. But there was no mention of Iran. As a matter of fact, from what I'm seeing here, anyways, up to this point, as a matter of fact, the U.S. representative the terrorist attack to have occurred in Iran a day earlier, did not come out and mention anything. And it's quite telling that Iran has come out and actually accused the U.S. of complicity. This shows the double standards that's at play over here. Why is this demonization so widespread when it comes to Iran, based on how you see it?
Yes, obviously the West is biased in this issue, and for them, their project is to divide and conquer, and whoever's in their way, and Iran is a government that is in their way because they're supporting the axis of resistance, and they're fighting for the Palestinian rights especially, and that is not in the interest of the U.S. and their allies. And for that reason, they support these terrorist acts and these terrorist organizations, and they don't condemn terrorist acts like this gruesome act that happened in Shiraz, where 15 innocent people were killed and murdered in such a gruesome way. And it was, the video was circulated everywhere on social media. They don't condemn it. They don't come out publicly and condemn it. So that means they support the terrorist acts and they're quiet about it. Because it's they believe it's in their interest. They know they cannot destroy the Islamic Republic of Iran or hurt it. So they're trying to just, cause some little turbulences here and there and hope that there could be grudges internally inside Iran and more divisions and seditions. But this will all fail miserably. We know this through the history. The Islamic Republic of Iran has been dealing with so much pressures, so much media war, so much politicians defaming the real picture of who the Islamic Republic of Iran is and who's Ayatollah Khamenei is and his leadership and his, unified nation. His nation came out today in millions. We've seen them in different cities the other day also protesting to support the Islamic Republic of Iran. But we don't see that on mainstream media. They only show one image and they want to show their narrative and their project. This is how biased they are. Unfortunately, they're exposing their real face, that they do support terrorism, because if they were against terrorism in general, that means even if they're against the Islamic Republic of Iran, that means when a terrorist attack happened inside Iran, they should come out quickly and rapidly and condemn that type of terrorist attack. But as we see, they don't care about humanity, and humanity is selective for them. They only care about certain people. They care about Ukrainian people, but they don't care about Palestinian people. They care about certain people in different countries, but they don't care about the Iranian people when they're being killed inside Iran, unless it's feeding their narrative, their project. And, the West should be held accountable for this. And hopefully, when there's real interrogations and there's real testimonies, I think this should be, put all over the media and expose the Western governments and who's backing up these terrorists and these sabotagers, these anarchists, all these people. Like today, I just drove by right now a protest on Yonge Street in Toronto, and we've seen, let's say hundreds or maybe 1,000 people protesting against the Iranian government. Obviously, this is all supported by the Canadian government. We didn't see one sign of those protesters saying that we condemn the terrorist attack in Shiraz and we mourn the people there. This shows you that even those people that are protesting, they have no care for human rights. If they did, they would at least say that they condemn the attack that happened in Shiraz. Especially inside of a shrine, these people were going inside to do a religious pilgrimage and to go pay respects to a very holy figure. And this city has a holy background to it. And, you know, these people were just visiting. It was normal civilians, you know. They were people that were like women and children and fathers. You know, we see the pictures. It's so painful to see such an attack on such innocent people.
So, Saymussen Abbas, taking a look at the word that I'm going to take out of what Faraz al-Najim said, which stood out, is the process of selectivity. The selectivity process here, obviously Iran being the choice, if we want to put it into perspective, the countries that were involved in the in the cooperation amongst themselves on the intel side, namely the U.S., Israel, and Saudi Arabia, we have to also mention the U.K., are they aware that they can also become a subject, for example, Saudi Arabia? We know how active and proactive and rather extremely, I'm not too sure what word to use, other than the fact that incitement is what they are doing practically, that they could, for example, become a victim themselves through the process of selectivity if and when, for example, the U.S. chooses the process for them to be targeted?
Well, firstly, the Saudis are puppets of the Anglo-Zionist Empire. They have no say in most of this foreign policy business. They do as they're told. That's literally how it works. Donald Trump said milking the cow was the priority. That's exactly how they are treated and used. So, of course, it's not in Saudi Arabia's interest. They're one of the countries that's on the front line. It's one of the regional nations which needs to split away from the U.S. and Anglo-Zionist control through the people's revolt, I would say, because the leaders certainly won't do it, because the kowtowing to American policy and Israeli policy only makes them a bigger target. Already they've got missiles and drones raining down on them in Riyadh and various other locations. They already have suffered huge defeat and a huge drain on their finances through the war on Yemen, the poorest country in that region. Already they've lost whatever they were trying to do in Syria, to try and bring down Assad over there. They've lost in terms of their backing of Al-Qaeda and the ISIS-type fraternities, again, on the say-so of the Americans, which they were doing. Everything they've done in the region has failed. And other than creating sectarianism to create regional unrest, act as the base camp for America, et cetera, to carry out its policies, or for the extension of the periphery policy of periphery strategy of Iran and the Yinon plan the Yinon plan of Israel, what else has it achieved?
Right.
So I'd say that going even deeper into this quagmire, Saudi Arabia particularly puts itself at huge risk, but also Israel, because let's not forget the rising of the Palestinians is going hand in glove with the rest of the axis of resistance. What you're seeing when you see Palestinians now stand up to Israel is really a successful effort by the axis of resistance to respond to exactly this kind of terrorism that they were doing in Palestine and beyond.
Okay.
So like the reaction and the war is already going on. This business of trying to rattle a few poor individuals in shrines is just desperation. It's an act of desperation on the part of the Anglo-Zionist Empire. It will fail. They won't be held to accountable by any international body because the money mafia that backs them controls most of these institutions like the UN. The only way for liberation is going to be through the hands-on struggle. That's the only way that this empire is going to be defeated.
Thank you for that. Saymussen Abbas, journalist and political commentator. Faraz al-Najim, thank you. Manager of the Canadian Defenders for Human Rights. Russia has accused the United Kingdom of involvement in explosions on the Nord Stream gas pipes in the Black Sea.
According to available information, representatives of this unit of the British Navy took part in the planning, provision, and implementation of a terrorist attack in the Baltic Sea on September 26 this year, blowing up the Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2 gas pipelines.
The Defense Ministry spokesman also accused British Navy of helping Ukraine plan a drone attack on Russia's Black Sea Fleet. The UK's Defense Ministry has rejected both claims that the British Navy was involved in attacks on Nord Stream and Russia's fleet. At least a dozen people, including women and children, are killed after two explosions rocked Somalia's capital, Mogadishu. Police say that nearly two dozen others are wounded. The first explosion hit the walls of the Education Ministry, smashing windows in the vicinity. Minutes later, the second explosion happened as ambulances arrived and people rushed to help the victims. No one has claimed responsibility for the attack. Al-Qaeda-affiliated terrorist group Al-Shabaab frequently carries out bombing and gun attacks in Mogadishu and elsewhere. The group has been fighting in Somalia, seeking to topple the central government there and to establish its own rule. South Korean civil leaders demand an end to joint U.S.-South Korea military exercises. The two countries have engaged in the largest military drills in 5 years, with more exercises to continue into November. The drills come amid a rise in tensions following North Korea's recent missile tests. And that is it for World News. Bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
In the U.S., House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's husband, Paul Pelosi, has been attacked at their California home with a hammer. The attacker has been identified as 42-year-old David DePape. DePape will be charged with attempted homicide, among other charges, according to San Francisco police. A motive for the attack is still unknown. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. British newspaper The Guardian has more on this story. Paul Pelosi, husband of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, was hospitalized with a skull fracture on Friday, 28th of October, after he was attacked at the couple's home in California with a hammer by an assailant who was reported to have shouted, "Where is Nancy? Where is Nancy?" Paul Pelosi, an 82-year-old, underwent successful surgery to repair a skull fracture and other serious injuries sustained during the assault and is expected to make a full recovery, according to Nancy Pelosi's spokesperson, Drew Hamill. Earlier, on Friday morning, Paul Pelosi was attacked at home by an assailant who acted with force and threatened his life while demanding to see the Speaker of the House. Drew Hamill said in a statement on Friday afternoon, 28th of October, San Francisco police said that Paul Pelosi managed to call 911 but didn't directly report what was happening, but that a dispatcher sent police officers to follow up with a well-being check at about 2:27 a.m. local time in the early hours of Friday morning. They found an adult male confronting Paul Pelosi and a hammer was being grasped by both men. The suspect pulled the hammer away from Pelosi and violently assaulted him with it. Our officers immediately tackled the suspect, disarmed him, took him into custody, said Bill Scott, the chief of the San Francisco Police Department. Bill Scott named the suspect as David DePape, a 42-year-old, and said he broke in through a back door. Charges are to be brought at the San Francisco County Jail, including attempted homicide, assault with a deadly weapon, abuse of an elderly person, burglary, and other felonies. David DePape remained in the hospital on Friday evening, but the San Francisco Police Chief Bill Scott did not disclose his condition. Scott said police were still investigating the motive for the attack, but said this was not a random act, this was intentional. It was reported by CNN that the suspect intended to tie the victim up until Nancy Pelosi got home, and that he had posted right-wing and conspiracy theories online, including content promoting the lie that former President Donald Trump was deprived of victory in the 2020 presidential election because of voter fraud. In a statement to CNN, an acquaintance of David DePape said he appeared to be out of touch with reality. Two of the suspect's relatives also told the network that DePape, who grew up in British Columbia, Canada, was estranged from his family. In addition to multiple conspiracy posts on his Facebook account, which was reviewed by CNN and later taken down by Meta on Friday, David DePape is also believed to have managed a blog to which he regularly posted screeds concerning the ruling class. The blog, which the San Francisco Chronicle reviewed and was later taken down, had a banner that said, "Welcome to Big Brother's Censorship Hell," along with numerous conspiracy posts about the U.S. government, media outlets, and technology companies. President Joe Biden called the attack on Paul Pelosi despicable and denounced people who spread lies about stolen elections for corroding the political climate in America and contributing to politically motivated violence. "Enough is enough," Joe Biden told supporters at a Democratic Party fundraiser in Philadelphia on Friday, 28th of October. "Every person of good conscience needs to clearly and unambiguously stand up against the violence in our politics, regardless of what your politics are. Democracy is literally, not figuratively, on the ballot this year," said Joe Biden, who warned about the dangers of extremism in an impassioned speech in Philadelphia last month. The president said reports indicated the attack on Paul Pelosi was aimed at Nancy Pelosi, and noted that the suspected assailant used the same chant, "Where is Nancy?" heard from supporters of former President Donald Trump when they stormed the U.S. Capitol building on 6th of January 2021. Joe Biden said it was not surprising that one party's repeated lies about stolen elections could affect people who may not be so well-balanced. According to the Associated Press, the attacker had specifically targeted the Pelosi family home. Video footage of the house showed glass shattered in a side entrance, indicating where the break-in may have occurred. A person briefed on the situation told the Associated Press that the intruder had confronted Paul Pelosi while demanding to know where his wife was. The speaker, who is second in line to succeed the president, was not at home at the time of the attack, but was in Washington, D.C. with security protection that accompanies her at all times. The website of NBC News has more details for us. San Francisco's district attorney said they expect to file attempted murder and other charges against the man accused of attacking Paul Pelosi with a hammer at his home on Friday, 28th of October. "Anytime you strike someone in the head in the fashion that Mr. Pelosi was hit, it is clear to us that he was attempting to kill him," District Attorney Brooke Jenkins told NBC Bay Area on Friday evening. She told the station her office expects to file charges of attempted murder, residential burglary, abuse of an elderly person, and assault with a deadly weapon. The suspect, David DePape, is accused of breaking into the Pelosi home and striking Paul Pelosi, the husband of Democratic House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, at least once with a hammer. Paul Pelosi, an 82-year-old, underwent surgery for a skull fracture and is now recovering, a spokesman for Nancy Pelosi has confirmed. San Francisco Police Chief Bill Scott said the attack was intentional and not a random act. A motive in the assault has not been released. David DePape was in hospital on Friday, 28th of October, but will be booked one way or the other, either in person or in absentia, Bill Scott said. Meanwhile, Representative Benny Thompson, the chairman of the House panel investigating the January 6th Capitol riot, called the attack on Paul Pelosi abhorrent and urged his congressional colleagues to reject divisive conspiracy theories that he said have fueled violence. Unfortunately, the attack against Paul Pelosi appears to be a symptom of a much larger problem within our democracy, said Benny Thompson, Democrat from Mississippi. He added, in recent years, we have seen a rise in domestic terrorism fueled in part by violent, racist, anti-Semitic and anti-democratic rhetoric. Benny Thompson cited the deadly 2017 white supremacist rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, and the Capitol riot of 6th of January 2021 as examples of how armed attackers have used violence to impose their views. So-called vigilantes have been intimidating voters at ballot drop boxes and harassing local election officials. America is better than this, Benny Thompson added. I call on my colleagues in Congress and elected officials across the nation to put country over party and reject the conspiracy theories that are proving so divisive, despite any perceived political advantage, Benny Thompson said. Thompson, who also chairs the House Committee on Homeland Security, called on federal agencies and law enforcement to reinforce efforts to protect officials and elections as the midterm elections approach.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladheena amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri wa salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear audience of IRIB English Radio, now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Asad Jafari.
In my first year of the Hawza, when I had this first class on Ilm al-Kalam, on theology, we had about 3 or 4 years of this course. My teacher had gone through on the board what's called the chain of thoughts. And he went through a 6-link chain with me that I want to go through with all of you tonight very quickly. It's usually I take 2 classes when I teach a course on the subject. I take about 2 classes to really explain this chain. I don't have that kind of time. Time flies, I'm amongst the beloved. He says, initially now, the first link of the 6-link chain of thought is that we have a thought in our head. Thousands of thought enter our mind. Thousands of thought a day, subconscious, consciously, doesn't matter. If ever we stop to think how much activity our brain goes through, we'd be in wonders. Even while we're sleeping, our brain is going. Some experts of neurology say that 95% of our daily life is done subconsciously. That's scary. I remember when I used to work overnight shift from 10 p.m. to 8 a.m. I love that shift so much. It's nice. No dress code, no management. You and 3 people. After 3 a.m., there's no work. You're paid full. MashaAllah. Pizza place open till 3 o'clock in the morning. It's beautiful. But that drive home at 8 a.m. after a 10-hour shift is a tough one. And literally, I remember some mornings, I would start my car at my job, end up on my driveway, and I have no idea what happened in between. When I actually became conscious, I wasn't passed out, but when I became conscious, I was on my driveway. I'm like, how'd I get here? I was able to south, make a right, make a left, this and that. Literally, the brain shuts off and muscle memory now takes over. 95%, some doctors say. Now, we have control of what happens inside of our subconscious. So my teacher said the first thing that happens is that a thought appears in our head. Could be a random thought. Could be a conscious thought. Right? I wonder where he's been this whole time. I wonder about this. I wonder about that. I wonder about the people right now in Karbala. I wonder about what's happening right now in Afghanistan. I wonder about all these things. Tomorrow, for example, what do I want for breakfast? What's my schedule for the day of Ashura? Where am I going on Shabbat Ashur? Thoughts enter, thoughts leave. What am I doing after Muharram and Safar? When will I go back to Hajj? Will Hajj ever happen again? It will, inshallah, hopefully. And thoughts enter and thoughts leave. He says there are some thoughts that we are inclined towards that linger in our head. And that's the second link. So from thoughts, he says, to inclination. From fikr to mail. Mail meaning we have this desire toward it. It won't leave our mind. So initially now somebody talks about, for example, the Hajj experience. And you think, wow, you know what? I've never really thought, you know, should I go for Hajj? It's possible, blah, 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 this and that. The talk is over. The guy has left your presence. Weeks pass by. You're still thinking about Hajj, 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 Hajj. Then you think about dates and you think about this. Can I get time off? Blah, blah, blah. How much is it? What's the best group? Blah, blah, blah. So while that initial thought is gone, the thought remains inside of you. Now there are some thoughts that enter our mind and leave our mind. Now if I can continue this Hajj example, the third link is that it is in my mind so much I'm inclined to the point where I sign up for Hajj. So I go from fikr to mail to fi'il. Follow the chain. So the first three of six links now. A thought, inclination, then action. That action doesn't happen until I'm inclined to it. Now I start asking around. You call me, say, you went for Hajj. Yes, I did. How was it? Would you recommend that group, this group, blah, blah, blah? Yes. Then he starts going online, filling out forms. He actually now begins to convert what was once a thought into actual action. He's moving towards signing up for Hajj. Talks to his boss, 3 weeks off, arranges for the kids to be babysat. Him and his wife now, let's go for Hajj. Perfect. Now action happens. Theek hai? The fourth link now is khulq, where now that action now repeats itself over and over and over again. It becomes part of your habits. Khulq, by the way, is where akhlaq comes from, right? Someone's akhlaq doesn't just appear like that. There's work done on someone's akhlaq. That's why from when you're a child, you're taught by your mom or dad, hopefully, about these small, little, basic, little akhlaqi points, right? Oh, my mom would always tell me, whenever I enter a room, jao salam bolo, jao salam bolo. Tum se bade hain, jao salam bolo. Go say salam. And she still does it. I go, mom, come on, man. I'm a father of three. And then, you know, she starts to talk English. I don't care if you're father of three. Go say salam to him. And now to the point where it's a habit of mine. Part of my akhlaq. I'm not talking about my akhlaq, but I'm saying it happens after constant repetition. So what's built into the fi'il is takrar, repetition, repetition, repetition. It happens enough to the point where it becomes part of your behavior, part of your akhlaq, part of your ethics. That's the fourth link. The fifth link is malaka, which is known as disposition. So follow the link, guys. I hope I'm not losing all of you, right? Fikr, mail, fi'il. Khulq malaka, all from one thought. A thought, inclination, action, habit, disposition. Now, you've done it so many times, you do it without thinking. Disposition is when it's so ingrained inside of you, you don't even have to think twice about it. And the final one, really where I want to really bring the point home, the sixth link is thought. Is your essence. Is the I talked about yesterday. Meaning what? It becomes so part of your akhlaq and behavior. You repeat it so many times that you end up now doing it without thinking about it to the point where you're known as that act. Oh. And by the way, this link, this chain can apply to good habits and also bad habits. You go from gambling a few times to becoming a gambler. Now you're known as a gambler. It's reached your essence level. Now you are a gambler, no longer gamble anymore. You go from smoking to becoming a smoker, drinking to becoming an alcoholic. You go from praying to becoming an abd of Allah. Do you see that link there? Fikr, ma'il, fi'il, khulq, malaka, dhat. Six links to a chain. Meaning it's possible the power of one thought could actually dictate to you who you become. Allahu Akbar. That's scary. Now the ulama have said that from the first link to about the fourth link, from fikr to khulq, from thought to behavior, takes about 40 days. That magical 40 number. 40 days. You do something over and over and over again, it becomes ingrained inside of you. Keep in mind the hadith I presented to you in the beginning. It went from qasadani to what? To rahmati. From the thought of me to my mercy. This goes from a point of fikr all the way to your thought. Thought meaning your essence. We're no longer talking about your physical being. How tall you are, right? The color of your eyes. Forget all that. Now it's who you are. The I from yesterday. These are carefully selected and put together lectures. They're all linked together. Now, what do we do about this now? His entire purpose behind telling us this class was that when you talk about deen or religion in general, be it Islam or Judaism or Christianity, the deen doesn't come in this chain. The deen is found before the chain. Meaning what? Thoughts don't just appear in our head. This is where I want your attention. Especially my young guys. I see you in the gym. It's not just appearing inside of you. There are triggers of thoughts. Things that trigger our thoughts. People that trigger our thought. People that place words in our heads. The media, for example. Our circle of influence, for example. The religion, the Ahlul Bayt, the Quran. Ourselves, our tragedy, our triumph, our family, the environment, social media, all of these are what? Triggers of thoughts. And so while sometimes you can't control what's in your thoughts, you can control your triggers. Not all of them.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karim Adi Alim Hali Hakim Mati.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
in the limelight.
Recently, French President Emmanuel Macron has expressed his dissatisfaction with the U.S. on multiple occasions. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of Global Times wrote, earlier this month, Macron criticized the U.S. for selling energy and gas to Europe at four times the price the U.S. sells to its own industry. Macron said, that is not exactly the meaning of friendship. He then reminded U.S. President Joe Biden to speak with prudence when commenting on the risk of nuclear conflict. During a press conference following the just-concluded EU summit in Brussels, Macron again called out U.S. double standards over selling gas to Europe at prices 3 to 4 times higher than it is sold in U.S. domestic markets. TFI Global, an India-based media outlet, published an article on October 18th entitled, Forget U.S.-Russia, a Cold War is underway between France and the U.S. While the West is trying hard to portray its unity amid the Russia-Ukraine crisis, France is apparently not safeguarding the U.S. prestige. This exposes deep contradictions in the transatlantic relationship. On the one hand, the practical interests of Europe and the U.S. are in growing conflict. Due to the Russia-Ukraine crisis, global energy prices are rising sharply. Costly energy imports have pushed the Eurozone into growing trade deficit. Worse, the U.S. Federal Reserve continues to raise interest rates, bringing huge pressure to the European Central Bank when it comes to policy adjustment. The euro has fallen below parity with the dollar, dividing to its lowest level in 20 years and ending a 1-to-1 exchange rate with the U.S. currency. On the other hand, the strategic goals of the EU and the US are not the same. The US is ganging up with its allies to safeguard its hegemony. This is not the ambition of the EU. The latter wishes to shape its foreign policy based on its own interest, rather than being forced to take sides in major power competition. This is the main driving force for Macron to stress Europe's strategic autonomy time and again. However, as the Ukraine conflict drags on, Europe is propelled to increase its reliance on the US-led NATO and has to sacrifice its economic interest in exchange for security guarantees. Europe seems to have no alternative but to allow the US to continuously impose the cost of Ukraine-Russia crisis onto itself, and its own strategic autonomy has been greatly jeopardized. In particular, the U.S. is relentlessly provoking the escalation of the Ukraine crisis, which has not only weakened Russia, but also strengthened the U.S. control over Europe. This has put Europe in greater economic difficulties, as well as on the brink of a more dangerous war. Behind Macron's warning to the U.S., there are not only great worries about the intensification of future crises, but also helplessness that he cannot control the destiny of France, as well as a strong call for Europe to strengthen unity. Of course, France has its own reasons for playing the role as an anti-U.S. fighter. France has a tradition of great power autonomy. It always has a global perspective, the importance of which cannot be overlooked. Former French President Charles de Gaulle had advocated France should adhere to an independent foreign policy and should not be completely constrained by the Western camp led by the U.S. For this reason, France once decided to withdraw from NATO's integrated military command, and it became the first Western major power to establish diplomatic relations with the People's Republic of China. Moreover, France has been an advocate for European integration. The rise of Germany's strengths, as well as the European debt crisis, once gave Germany the chance to lead Europe. After former German Chancellor Angela Merkel left politics, it gave France the opportunity to try to dominate European internal and foreign policies. In addition, Macron has his own political needs to take care of Macron. Macron has regarded the revival of France as his own responsibility, promoting reforms internally and striving for France's status as a great power externally. In this year's presidential election, he was re-elected, but failed to gain an absolute advantage in the parliament. The domestic reform agenda was limited by the obstruction of the opposition. Therefore, Macron needs to make some breakthroughs in European integration and other diplomatic issues in order to strengthen his rule. The contradiction between France and the US, or between Europe and the US, is more of a contradiction in the Western camp and the result of uneven distribution of power and interest. However, France's disappointment toward the US has a limited impact. It will not change the dominant subordinate structure between the US and Europe, nor will it deal a fundamental blow to the hegemonic system of the US. It is impossible for France to give up the institutional dividends of the West either. But Macron's dissatisfaction toward the US will more or less bring some variables to transatlantic relations. For example, when the US-EU Trade Technology Council TTC meeting is held in September, the two sides will find it more difficult to coordinate with each other. In addition, when Europe and the US have a trade conflict in the field of electric vehicles, Germany will definitely stand on the side of France. It means the deepening differences between France and Germany will be breached, and Europe will form a tougher stance towards the US. The issues that seem to be problems only between the US and Europe could also add uncertainties to the current increasingly complex relationship among more major powers. According to Bloomberg, Macron said US trade and energy policies has created a double standard, and Europe was left paying higher prices for its natural gas, according to a report by oilprice.com. The comments from Macron come following 2 weeks of protest staged by workers in French oil refineries TotalEnergies and ExxonMobil. France was the latest country to withdraw from the Energy Charter Treaty, ECT. It has now switched to being a net importer of energy from once being a net exporter of energy. There are strikes reported at EDF's nuclear reactors as well. Macron is unhappy with the price it is paying for the liquefied natural gas LNG France is importing from the US. It turned to the US for LNG to make up for its declining nuclear fleet and also for the total halt of the Russian energy supplies. Bloomberg added the oilprice.com report revealed that U.S. natural gas exports to France increased 421% during the first 8 months of 2022. But LNG prices are soaring and increased by 1,094% in August alone. In Brussels, Macron said that the North American economy is making choices for the sake of attractiveness, which creates a double standard. He pointed out that at home, the US enjoys low energy prices, but exports energy at higher prices. He also pointed out that state aid for some sectors goes up to 80%, while state aid is prohibited under the Treaty on the Functioning of the EU, TFEU. Macron earlier this week referred to both the US and Norway and said some nations are reaping the real super profits from geopolitical war unearned income. Macron's recent comments also reflect the troubles that are arising between France and the US. The ties are strained over the AUKUS deal, where the US, the UK, and Australia formed a grouping, and the US said it would provide Australia with 8 conventionally armed but nuclear-powered submarines. Australia earlier had a pact with France with respect to nuclear-powered submarines. Macron is expected to visit the United States in December and will take up the subject of energy with his American counterpart, Joe Biden.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Faith based on understanding. Saturday, the 4th of Ramadan, 1394, 21st of September, 1974. But I want you to know that when I talk about the generation that is losing its faith, I am not talking about the younger generation. I am talking about the generation before the youth of today, the older generation of our society. These who believe in some things blindly. Yes, they come to the majlis in the mosque to hear the sermons and storytelling. Yes, they come to the congregational prayers at the mosque. But because none of this is based on reason or logic, they can also be easily convinced to burn down the very same mosque, to trample Imam Hussein and to give up all their religiosity for those things they think have real value. They do this and you can see them do this. Today, one of the real crises that we are facing is in the generation before the youth, those who lack the awareness and understanding of the Muslim youth today, and who sadly also lack the deep, unshakable faith of two generations past. They lack the thoughtfulness and understanding by virtue of which they could nurture a strong and abiding faith in themselves, and are instead held by the bonds of money, position, status, desire, prosperity, and comfort. Nor do they have a strong ark or impregnable fortress like one or two centuries ago, in which, at the very least, they could shelter their faith, even if this was only acquired blindly.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
A 100 years ago, these snares for one's thoughts, faith and beliefs did not exist. In those days, the hands of the enemy, those treacherous fingers, had not penetrated so deeply into the fabric of our society. There were still plots which had yet to come to fruition. They still had to deprive people of their fundamental religious faith if they wanted to heap misery on them. But these plots have since succeeded. The generation before the youth, the generation who are no longer young but are rather the youth of yesterday, they are trying to build their faith and belief in the face of a flood without even having a firm foundation on which to build. How lucky are those who chose their faith based on understanding, comprehension, awareness, and knowledge. A flood will sometimes carry off great trees while leaving those tender saplings unscathed because their roots go twice as deep into the grounds. Those things that have a foundation do not shake so easily. They do not fall so easily. In any case, this is a reality that is present in Islam. My brothers, the faith that has value is faith based on understanding. The faith that is joined with comprehension and awareness. Faith based on insight. With open eyes, without fear of criticism.
I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.